Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, he is Zach Seiko, and we're ready for some Penn State football talk coming off an exciting overtime win at USC, 33-30. A lot of good things happened for Penn State. A lot of things maybe not as good. But, Zach, let's start with this. I think at the start of the season, it's become kind of the narrative of Penn State, 10-2 every year. Yeah. And I think a lot of folks, Michigan dropping off the schedule this season. Well, Ohio State's the one loss. Where's the second loss? Everyone pointed at this USC game on the road as being that second loss. I'd say they changed the narrative.
Yeah, they did. I mean, we can't say that it wasn't close, though, right? I certainly had my preseason doubts, and then leading up to it, seeing what USC, because I thought USC, originally, I thought they were going to be able to beat Michigan, obviously Minnesota, and then just kind of watching those games. And then ultimately I said, you know what? Michigan's going to beat USC. Michigan's going to beat Minnesota, or Minnesota's going to beat USC too. And I have the FanDuel slips to prove that as well. But it's not because USC is a bad football team. A loss is a loss, right? But those were just not ideal situations given where those teams were on the schedule and how they matched up against those teams, given that who was available and who was unavailable. Now, for Penn State to go across the country, to fly 6 hours, the coast-to-coast record for Big Ten football is 1-9, while Penn State bucked that trend, right? Now with the second overall win. And so this was a really difficult game. I certainly had my doubts in the preseason, but as USC kind of continued to play football, and it's like, okay, Penn State can win this game despite the odds being stacked against them. And they truly were. Most other teams wouldn't have been able to win that game. Penn State was one of the few. I'd say selected, like Michigan wouldn't have beat USC on the road. Minnesota certainly would have not beaten USC on the road. Penn State, Ohio State, I think, are the only two schools in the Big Ten that would have won that game at the Coliseum. And if Oregon, a different story, right? They're closer, but the teams that have to fly across the country like that, pretty much the Buckeyes and the Nittany Lions.
Well, let's talk about that. That's another narrative that began, especially last week, the Big Ten. You travel two time zones, it's hard to win. Yep. Teams in the Big Ten were 1-8. And I think Washington and USC were two good examples. I think combined they lost 4 games on the road where they had to travel east that way. We also saw Ohio State go down against Oregon. So how real is this narrative? You travel cross coast, you're going to have issues.
I mean, you absolutely are going to have issues because these are – these are schools, and remember, these are student athletes. I'll start with that. Student athletes. These aren't professional football players, even though we are moving away from that amateurism. And I think I brought that up on your show. I've definitely brought it up on Locked On Nittany Lions, Jim, about how these are still college student athletes. They're 18 to relatively 22, 23 years old. They're not used to traveling like this. And let alone in the middle of the season. It's one thing to do it for the Rose Bowl when you're on winter break, your class load is a lot lower, your workload's a lot lower, and you also have a month to prepare for an unfamiliar team, and then you fly 6 hours, then you have the week to adjust. Penn State had, what, 36 hours once they landed in Los? No, not even that. I guess give or take. They had relatively 24 hours to get used to everything. Jet lag, the climate, the time difference, everything. After being on a 6-hour flight. So that's not easy to do when it's in the middle of the season like this. It's one thing to do it at the end of the year for one game, not when you have a game before it. Fortunately for Penn State, they have a bye week, but not every team gets that luxury of traveling a long distance and then they got to go play another football game again. Like Penn State still has football games in front of them. This is not easy to do for Penn State or for anybody.
It really isn't. And again, I think of Ohio State as the more talented team than Oregon. Mm-hmm. I do believe the difference was that travel, absolutely, having to go to the West Coast, playing in a tough environment at Oregon. It's like today's theme is hitting on all the narratives, Zach.
Sure.
One of the other narratives going on is this Penn State starting slow. And I'll tell on myself a little bit. Penn State stopped USC on the first possession. Mm-hmm. Penn State went the length of the field, had to settle for the field goal, but they went the length of the field. I quickly tweeted out, there goes that slow start thing.
Yeah.
Well, it took about 10 seconds before USC went the length of the field in one play and eventually got up 20-6. So how important is that slow start narrative? Because it does seem to be a trend now, a real thing.
I don't know that it's, I mean, it's reality. I don't know that it's a narrative or a subjective thing. It's definitely objective. There was a slow start against West Virginia. There was a slow start against Bowling Green. I mean, even to an extent, Kent State, like Penn State, didn't put up a boatload of points until late in the first quarter, trailing into the second quarter. They've always, Illinois was a slow game, and then Penn State was able to close it out. The reason for that, I am not concerned about that, actually, in the slightest. The slow starts are by proxy of installing a new offense and a new defense, okay? So not only is Penn State, like Penn State had to replace at all three coordinators, right, Jim? So the slow starts are indicative of there's still this level of comfortability. I don't want to say, I don't want to imply confidence, like they're confident in the system. There's belief in the system, but you have to get used to playing within the system. You have to figure out what works, what doesn't work. You can only learn so much about yourself at practice, Jim, but when you're playing against an opponent that is trying to stop you and not allow you to make little mistakes that you can correct, that's what, you know, practice is for. Iron sharpens iron, but everybody has the same common goal at Penn State to, you know, make sure that everybody gets better. USC is trying to intentionally limit you that day. They're trying to make you work for it. They're not going to make anything easy. Whereas the offense and defense, you can go through in a practice and say, all right, let's work on this. Let's fine tune this. USC isn't going to give you that opportunity. Obviously, we know that. But that's my point. You don't learn what your true identity is until you go into those in-game situations. You only understand so much about yourself at practice. And now Penn State continues to build, and they can go and look at the film. Hey, this is what worked. We'll keep this from the Illinois game. Let's scrap that. Let's never run that again. It did not work, and that's going to hurt us down the stretch. You now have another result. You now have another building block that you can use to understand and look at and say, hey, this is what we're doing right. This is what we're doing wrong. So better days are ahead for Penn State. And those slow starts will be a thing of the past, I think, especially with the bye week here. And with Ohio State coming up, that's all too important as well. So the slow starts are a first half of the season thing. I don't think that'll be the case moving forward down the final six games.
Okay, I've kind of been the negative Nelly here, even after a win to start. Let's go to the more positive side. Mm-hmm. Zach, I think, especially you and I think, have been very positive about Drew Aller and his play. Mm-hmm. I think both of us and a lot of other folks knew who Tyler Warren was and what he's capable of. However, this really felt like the national coming out party for Drew Aller and Tyler Warren, didn't it?
For anybody outside of Penn State circle, absolutely. There's now this national attention. I saw so many people that had either just kind of pushed Penn State to the side and said, okay, you know, it's always the wait and see, for most of these people that aren't fully invested in anybody, let alone Penn State. But there's now this belief there. It's seeing is believing, Jim. So anybody that said that, oh, Drew Aller's not good enough, you know, we still need to see it from Tyler Warren, that's kind of the fact. So Penn State has tangible proof that Tyler Warren's the clear-cut John Mackey Award leader, should be one of the first tight ends, if not the first tight end taken in the 2025 NFL draft. But now the bar moves. So everyone says that, okay, Drew Aller, he did it, or that he's... We knew this, but it's the point that Drew Aller was able to adjust on the fly like this. The things that would have hurt Drew a season ago, multiple turnovers in a big game like this. Now, he didn't do that a season ago. He was also never in a position where he had to lead a game tying or a go ahead type of drive. Yes, they were trailing against Ohio State. Yes, they were trailing against Michigan, but they were kind of out of those games. It really would have taken a miracle to get back into those games. Not a game where it was on the line, and Drew Aller, if he makes the mistake, that's it. Penn State loses. And it's the fact that Drew had multiple interceptions, consequential ones too. I don't really count that third one that happened at the end of regulation on a Hail Mary. But Drew overcame not one, but two interceptions, kept a level head. And that fourth quarter drive where they tied the game with the Singleton touchdown, he had to complete multiple fourth down conversions. And it was Drew Aller quarterbacking their way down the football field. That's what impressed me the most. Tyler Warren getting 17 catches, 224 yards, and a touchdown and doing everything is great. But it's the fact that Drew Aller put the team on his shoulders in crunch time when he had never done it before and led them down the football field. And not once, but twice converting on fourth downs to a receiver that he doesn't have a lot of chemistry with. And the timing and the miscommunications have been very apparent. And he went back to Fleming after the mistakes that they've had throughout the season. I thought that showed me everything I needed, that I needed confirmed about Drew Aller.
And it's become a bit of a theme from me, and folks may think it's a broken record, but I think also seeing his mobility, he ran a couple times effectively, mm-hmm. but on that second fourth down conversion, he moved within the pocket, avoiding the rush to make that play, Zach. And I don't want that to get forgotten because, yeah. again, the narrative that he's a big, strong guy who can't move, you know, just stick him in the pocket. I hope that kind of play puts that to rest.
I mean, it doesn't look the prettiest. Like, he's not this he's very athletic for his build, but does he look like the smoothest 4.4 type of speed, you know, 4.4 40 speed runner? No, he doesn't, but he can move, and that's something that's been pointed. I think Drew's best attribute is being able to extend plays within the pocket. I would compare it to a Tom Brady. Tom Brady was so good. I see these vintage highlights of Tom Brady with the New England Patriots, and he's just so good at creating a pocket himself, allowing the offensive line to do its job and staying upright. He doesn't bail when the pocket collapses. No, he takes a couple steps to the left or to the right and extends the play in itself within the pocket. Drew has such great pocket mobility. NFL franchises, general managers, and scouts love that about Drew Aller.
Do you know what's sad for me, Zach, is you talk about Tom Brady as if it's ancient history. It makes me feel so old. And the example I want to give in that, I'll go further back. If you ever see highlights of Dan Marino, who was considered a statue, but his ability to just sort of glide within the pocket, right. avoid the rush, and make the play. That's my era. I go back to Dan Marino. Zach, that is it for quarter one. We got lots more to go. Stick with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. This is quarter number two of our show. Before we dive back into it, Zach, why don't you let our listeners know where they can find all your podcasts?
Well, Jim, I appreciate that. So I am the host of Locked On Nittany Lions. It's a daily 30-minute podcast around Penn State football, but not only Penn State football. Talking Penn State wrestling, Penn State men's basketball is getting ready to return. So all of that I discuss all of that on the show and so much more. Locked On Nittany Lions on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Daily 30-minute episode Monday through Friday.
Make sure you check that out. All right, Zach, we've been talking about this Penn State USC game, and it's interesting. Earlier in the first segment, you talked about Michigan and Minnesota mm-hmm. beating USC. And I think we all thought of that as providing the model how you beat USC. And it's with the running game. And it seemed like Penn State, two great running backs. Typically, their running to passing ratio is like 2-1. I believe the most passes Drew Aller has thrown in the game is 24. and all of a sudden he's throwing 40-some in this game. What happened? What did the running game, was it just not effective enough? Was USC playing for the run? Just how did we end up where we did?
No, that's, I think that's a good point to make, because it certainly went away from what Penn State can do and what they're, and what they're able to do. So that's what the difference, I'll start with this. The biggest difference between 2023 Mike Yurcich versus 2024 Andy Kotelnicki is Kotelnicki isn't boxed in. This offense does not play in a phone booth. They are so dynamic that they can run the ball 60, 70 times if they really need to. They can throw the ball 40, 50, 60 times if they need to. And that's what, so Andy Kotelnicki will play any and every card to get the offense to move up and down the football field. You saw it against, like, that's the thing. You can't game plan for Andy Kotelnicki's system to an extent. We saw against Illinois that Penn State went ground and pound, ran the football, sustained those 10, 12, 15 play drives. And against USC, it turned into a shootout because that was the only way that USC was going to beat Penn State. This game needed to turn into a high scoring affair or else USC had no chance. They couldn't get into a rock fight with Penn State. So going back to the game itself, USC kind of flipped the game script. I mean, Penn State was down 20-6. When you're trailing, you can't run the football as much as you'd like to. Now, granted, there was a whole half, but Penn State clearly needed to get back into the football game, and USC kept, you know, retaking the lead. They kept retaking. It was 30-23. Penn State wasn't going to run the football all the way down the field to tie the game. No, they had to throw the football and run a little bit more of a balanced attack. So the game script is part of it. Penn State was trailing, and had you throw the football more when you're behind. When you're winning, you run the football more because you want to chew clock. In the case of the ground game specifically, the offensive line still is not perfect. They're still not great. The debate is out whether they're good or whether actually if they're good. They're okay, in my opinion. Sometimes they put together above average performances, and I'm not saying they can't get better. But to this point, Jim, they are middle of the road. They're average. They have their flaws, and they need to find ways to get better. So USC does have a pretty poor run defense, but Penn State's offensive line isn't that much better to where they can be dominant against a weak USC run defense. And then to add on top of that, Nicholas Singleton's not 100%. He played a fair amount. I think he played a total of 43 snaps, but I think if this game wasn't so consequential for Penn State's season, I don't know that Singleton would have played. There was a reason he was held out against UCLA. I have no idea. I'm not trying to imply that I know what the injury is. It doesn't seem to be an illness or whatever the speculation was, but Singleton does not look like himself. He's kind of a half step or maybe even a full step behind. He scored that tying touchdown, which was great. He proved very valuable in this game, but he was still fairly limited, and I think that's it. Penn State's running game couldn't be explosive, so Singleton is extremely valuable down the stretch, and the bye week couldn't have come at a better time. So game script, the offensive line not being the best, Penn State being able to do whatever it wants offensively given to what they need to do, and Singleton not being 100% is the reason why, in short, why the ground game wasn't as effective against USC.
Now, to your credit, you've talked about this quite a bit, that Andy Kotelnicki will do what's necessary to win. Yes. If it takes 40 passes, he will. He hasn't had to do that up until this point.
Right.
But I believe that Drew Aller, in the earlier games in this season, has shown he has the ability to carry the team. They could lean on him if they need to. Now, I'll give out another concern, though. Three times this team was in the red zone and had to settle for a field goal. Twice they were actually inside the five, Zach.
I know.
That's a little scary.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. I think the difference for me, if Penn State were, if they had lost that game, my immediate analysis would have been, what are you doing inside of the red zone? You can't get inside of the USC 10-yard line and end up settling. Now, ultimately, so the red zone, they scored one touchdown and three field goals. Ryan Barker, as a college kicker, made those. He was 4-for-4. He proved to be one of the most valuable players on Saturday. But absolutely, in a game where points they weren't at a premium. But again, USC could score in a matter of seconds. We saw that. So the fact that Penn State would drive down the field, march down the field, and then settle for three, and then in the blink of an eye, USC would turn around and in one or two plays were scoring a touchdown, that was a concerning trend. It didn't cost them, but I Catron Allen's the power back between the tackles, so I'm not understanding why, even if Nicholas Singleton isn't 100%, why Penn State is having issues when it's a goal-to-go situation, when you have a Catron Allen available to you and there's no issues with him. Julian Fleming, as the veteran, he gets called for that pass interference call. It's dicey, but as a six-year player in college football, he needs to know better to sell that route. The extension of the arm, even though it was subtle, it wasn't a full-on block, but it was enough for the referee to say, hey, there's something there. I blame that on Fleming. If that's maybe an Amari Evans, if that's maybe a Tysier Denmark in that situation, a little more understandable. Julian Fleming is a six-year veteran. I don't know there's a lot of excuses for not being able to sell that pick route to open up the touchdown, and they ultimately settle for three. It didn't cost them, but I agree with you. Ohio State's going to make you pay for that if you're settling for three and not getting seven when you're inside of the opponent's 10-yard line.
Yes, I am concerned about it a little bit. And I think a little bit, and Andy Kotelnicki was so good in so many ways with his play calling. But where I get a little bit concerned is you have the ability, like you mentioned Catron Allen. I'll throw in there the Wildcat with Tyler Warren, where he's another power back, okay? And you have some flexibility with that.
Bo Prabula, even. They use Bo Prabula on the other side of the 50, but not in goal-to-go situations. I feel like that's where you can get a lot of misdirection in close spaces where Bo Prabula would be better suited to run that formation, not on the 30, 40-yard line of Penn State, but down at the goal-to-go situations.
I very much agree with that. And instead of, you know, when you pass it from like the 4 or 5 yard line and create a third down situation, if you ran the ball and just got minimal, you know, 2 yards and all of a sudden it's third and two, you still have two more downs because then it's four down territory. The other place, and again, I'm nitpicking here a little bit, Zach, but when they had third and three from their own 49 yard line, I'm saying to myself, this is four down territory.
Sure.
And I've got third and three. If I run the ball at that point and come up short, there's a good chance I'm still making it now a fourth and one and make it very, I don't want to say easy, but a lot more palatable than fourth and three. So I was a little disappointed in the play call there on third and three.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Andy Kotelnicki's reading the matchup. He's also taking in, you know, what the players are seeing as well. And I will question like some calls here and there because it's easy to see the TV broadcast, but they're seeing things on the football field from the press box that we're not going to see from a TV or in the game if we're there. You know, I didn't go out to Los Angeles, but they are seeing things differently. And if they see a linebacker like cheat on a play, or if it drops back into coverage and that's kind of what's being consistently called, like they pick up on that. They notice those little things that might not necessarily be easy to see on a television broadcast. So it's kind of indicative of what the USC defense is allowing them. But that's why, so I won't put too much stock into select play calls here and there. It's ultimately Andy Kotelnicki takes what the defense is giving to them. And again, they won. Now, it wasn't a dominant victory, but they did win. So I understand what you're saying, and I agree to an extent, but Kotelnicki makes the decisions that he makes for a reason.
It's a good point. There is more going on that we don't see. But right. I think in general, in looking at those plays and having the running game that this team has, it would seem to make sense. All right, Zach, let's real quickly take a look at the big picture and what this win means for Penn State. It's now a situation where, you know, they still have to go on the road to Wisconsin. They still play in Minnesota. But this game, this win, puts them in absolutely fantastic position when you're thinking playoffs.
Yeah, they're in complete control. Penn State would be still most likely an underdog to Ohio State at that point when that game happens in 3 weeks. If you assume that's a loss and everything else is a win, 11-1 gets you into the college football playoff and most likely get you a home playoff game. And depending on how Oregon winning against Ohio State kind of complements things, but regardless of the result of that Ohio State game, Penn State can play for a Big Ten championship if everything goes right. Penn State can get a first round bye in the college football playoff if everything goes right. So forget the home playoff game for a second. Penn State might be a top four team if they do this right. They are in control of their own destiny. By winning this USC game, they take themselves out of judgment day by the College Football Playoff Committee. They don't allow a bunch of suits around a table to decide, hey, where does Penn State get ranked? Penn State is in prime position, win out, maybe drop that one game to Ohio State. You are in prime position to do, I don't want to say unthinkable things, but do the things that maybe the doubters wouldn't have given you credit for at the beginning of the season.
Well, I think no doubt 11-1 can get you that home playoff game. But I'll tell you what, Zach, there's also Ohio State with that loss to Oregon. They are going to have a lot of pressure on them when they come to Penn State.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And I think Ryan Day is already hearing it. So that becomes a pressure-packed game for Ohio State. And Penn State, if they could get to the Ohio State undefeated, and even if they lose that game – I think they're in wonderful position for a home playoff game, which quite candidly, I've been lobbying for that since they announced it, Zach. All right, that is it for quarter number two. And Zach, thanks so much for your time, Zach. Thank you all for listening. Stick around, though. We still have Sean Gold with Sean's Take coming. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hop Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I am Jim Galante. I'm with Sean Gold from Sean's Take. Sean, how we doing?
You know, not great after last weekend. We're going to get into the slate, Jim. It was frustrating, but I also have to say I don't regret that many picks. It was a wild weekend of college football. That's what college football has been all season long. And some weeks we've nailed it because of that. This one, unfortunately, did not go our way.
Well, it was a really tough week for you. It was a worse week for me in making picks. So what I thought – you know, we always go over, we don't gloss over our mistakes. We fess up to them. We handle it. And I think the question will be here, did we learn anything from it? Did we learn any lessons? I think the first lesson I learned, and we'll see this as we go through the games, Sean, is how good those people are at setting the spreads.
That's very true. It amazes me every single week how many half-point covers we get. I don't know how they get it that accurate in such a random sport that football is, when anything can happen, but they nail these spreads.
They really did. And some of these games, I'm looking back at them, and like you, I think the picks we made were pretty solid. And even the games themselves may have even demonstrated that they were solid picks. They just didn't go our way. How's that? That sounds like loser talk, but I do believe it. So let's go through these games. Let's start with a winner for you. That was Texas and Oklahoma. It was a 14-point spread. Me, I took Oklahoma in the 14 points, and here was my logic. I thought, especially in the Southeast Conference, we were seeing a lot of games. We were seeing upsets. We were seeing a lot of close games, much closer than we anticipated, and I just thought that 14 points was a lot. In no way did I think Oklahoma was going to win, but I thought they could keep it within the 14. Texas 34, Oklahoma 3, Sean.
Well, what's funny about that game, you know, like you said, I had Texas winning because I thought that they were that good. And I thought they saw these other top 10 teams drop games last week and we were going to be ready. But what's funny is morning of Saturday morning, I placed a bet on the over. It was set at 50 on the dot. And I'm thinking, you know what? I think Texas is going to get to the 30s. And that means, you know, Oklahoma, they should be within 20 points. You know, they'll push that over. Well, Texas got into the 30s, but Oklahoma's offense was nowhere to be found. And also, Red River rivalry, if you go back, those have been high-scoring games historically, and we just did not get that. So Texas showed their dominance, and Oklahoma also showed, and they got some issues that they got to work through.
All right. Next up, Penn State, USC. Now, when we played this, USC was getting 5.5 points. We both took Penn State. And I think, Sean, during the week, it actually got down to 3.5 in a lot of places. Penn State wins by 3. Now, and maybe this is a little bit, I'm looking at this with the blue and white glasses on, but I still believe after that game that Penn State is at least a 6 or 7.5 point better team than USC is. They fell behind early. Credit to USC, especially Penn State marches down the field after stopping USC in their first possession. Penn State marches down the field, looked like they scored a touchdown. The 7 points taken off, it becomes 3 points. Right there is a 4-point difference. And USC scores on, it's not fair to call it a fluke play. It was well designed. But boom, one play, you fool the defense once, and you score 7 points. I think USC did a good job in the first half of exploiting Penn State's defense. But I'll still go back and say that I think Penn State was a pretty good pick in that game.
I agree with that. I think they should have covered. And the thing that really frustrated me with Penn State, I did not like their play calling in the first half. They tried to get too cute and they tried to scheme up USC too much. When, look, USC's weakness is their run defense. Penn State's strength is their run offense. We should have been pounding the rock in the first half, and they didn't do that. They got away from these traditional game plans where they're going to run first down, second down, and you're likely at third and short and can run again on third down, and then it opens up the play action pass. And, you know, they were doing trick formations and things in the first half, and I thought it was unnecessary. And I would like for Penn State moving forward to stick to their game plan, because what they're good at, they're really good at. We have two incredible running backs and an incredible run game. Let that be the driving force of this offense, and don't try to get cute again. Just run your base scheme that has worked all season long and stick to it and play defense. And that's what they did in the second half. And that's how they ended up coming back and winning this game. And I wish they did that in the first half. And if they did, I think we would have covered that spread.
It's interesting. I use the exact same terminology. They were getting a little too cute. And I'll even pinpoint it to a couple specific plays. It's great to see some of the things Andy Kotelnicki is doing. But there were two instances. One, also, like you said, in the first half, when they were on their own 49-yard line around midfield, third and three, and they threw the ball. I thought that was the perfect situation. You run it because you know you're in four down territory, because they lined up on fourth down to go for it, then had a penalty. But instead of then having to go for it on a fourth and three, it probably at worst would have been like fourth and one, where you feel pretty good about it. The other time, it was even in that situation where they scored the touchdown. First and goal from the 5, I think I have 4 downs to pound the ball to get it to the end zone. And they started throwing the ball on 2nd down. Now, again, they got into the end zone, but there was a penalty. It was called back. They wouldn't have run into that situation. So I'm in agreement with you. I do still stand by that pick. It's a loser pick, but I stand by it. Let's go to the next one up, was Ohio State and Oregon. We both took Ohio State. As we know, Oregon won in a close one. This is one that could have gone either way. It was only a 4-point spread. again, it's not one of those that I look back on and say, boy, did I read that one wrong.
No, this one, I would double down on Ohio State again in this matchup. I still think they're the better team. They had Oregon kind of right where I wanted them at halftime. I said, you know what? Keep this thing close at half. Second half, that's when Ohio State can kind of wear you down. And they did that. And then they fell apart in the fourth quarter at the end and let Oregon back into that game and let Oregon win that game. I don't regret that pick at all. If those two teams played again tomorrow, I'd be doubling down and taking Ohio State. I still think they're a better team than Oregon, and Oregon's a very good team. But Ohio State lost that game. I don't think Oregon necessarily won it.
And there's a very good chance we'll see that again. I know Penn State fans don't want to hear this, but we could very well see Oregon-Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. Next game up was Ole Miss and LSU. And it's funny, I've picked some games where I say, hey, it's pretty close. If I'm going to get points, I'll take the points. Ole Miss-LSU, I thought might be close, but it was only 2.5 points. So a field goal difference wins the game and covers the spread. You and I both took Ole Miss. LSU did win by a field goal in overtime. This is another one of those games. Probably if they played 10 times, it would be a field goal game 8 out of 10 times.
I completely agree. And the one thing that, you know, I regretted about this pick, because I texted you the morning of and I said, oh boy, I'm seeing a lot of things on how good LSU is at home. I wish I looked more into that. I was taking that game thinking, you know, I don't think LSU is that great of a team. And then all these kind of trends and circumstances start popping up and they prove to be true. So I'm a little disappointed in Ole Miss because I thought this was good enough to be a playoff team. And Lane Kiffin offenses are incredible. But, you know, they've showed that they can be stopped. And I think that loss really takes Ole Miss probably out of playoff contention, which is unfortunate because that was a fun football team to watch. And for a while, I thought that their offense could, you know, upset anybody on any given day if they were really clicking, and LSU showed that Ole Miss can be stopped indeed.
And Ole Miss has a pretty favorable schedule. Now, they still have Oklahoma coming up and Georgia. But, I, you know, as you put it, I think Ole Miss has eliminated themselves from the playoffs. I thought this was a playoff elimination game, probably for both teams. I just thought Ole Miss, that would be enough incentive for them. Next up, I think this is the first time we've had Pitt on our picks here. It was Cal at Pitt, surprisingly undefeated Pitt team. And it was at Pitt. I thought, you know, we would, and Pitt was just, they were a 3.5 point favorite at home. They win by 2.
Another one that I just don't understand. At halftime, it looked like we were going to get a pretty easy cover here. And then Pitt just disappears in the second half. And, you know, you can't predict that for any team. When things are looking good in the first half and things just fall apart at the end, it, you know, it makes me upset being, you know, a predictor of these games. But I don't regret that pick at all. Pitt, you know, they won the game like we thought, but they dominated that first half. And then They just didn't show up for the second half. They still played defense, but their offense went away.
And ironically, there's been multiple games where they've been down multiple scores and have come back in the second half. So you'd feel pretty good about that. No, not to be. Well, finally, here's one that we both won. Kansas State, Colorado. Colorado was getting 6 points. And I remember my statement, Sean, was, it's a Big 12 game. I'll take the team that you get 6 points. And sure enough, that was the difference for us in this one.
Yeah, Colorado did what we thought. And, you know, they were in that game till the very end, just like we had talked about. And, yeah, 6 points in a Big 12 game with two good teams is way too many points. So we like the underdog there, and we got that one right.
Yes, that was, for me, that was the only win I had of the weekend. You did a little bit better than me, but it was a week, like you said, Sean, that just a tough week. And usually when we look back at our losses, we'll say, that was probably not a smart pick. I'm looking through it and I can't see that, you know, this week, which is unusual. But You know what, though, Sean? We got a new week coming up. We got a new chance. And when we come back, we are going to look at our six-pack of games, plus maybe a bonus pick when we come back. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. It's quarter number four of our show, which means it's time to make our picks for this weekend. We've got our Pulp Daddy picks. We've got a six-pack and a bonus game, I think, on this week. So let's get right to it. We don't have a Penn State game this week. They're on a bye. So let's hit it. Let's get our first Pulp Daddy pick. It's Miami at Louisville. Miami is a four-point favorite. And this one's interesting because I'm not sure how often Miami is going to be tested. So this for an ACC game, this is an interesting one, maybe a situation where Miami might get tested. Now, the following week, they have Florida State, which I think has just fallen apart to the point we can't look at them as a test. And after that, it's Duke, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and Syracuse. This may be their biggest test left.
It is their biggest test left. And really, when I look at this Miami team, one, I think they've got the best player on the field in Cam Ward. He has been a stud for them. He's in the Heisman conversation, and rightfully so. However, for Miami, you know, not having been tested, at least on paper, they should have a couple losses. That Cal game got crazy. That never should have been that close. And really, Miami got lucky to win that game. I think that I don't know that they're an undefeated team, and I don't know that they'll be an undefeated team after this week. So I'm going to go with Louisville in this game. Miami plays dangerous football. I think Louisville at home might be able to take advantage of that, Jim.
I'm with you on this one also. Miami, the other game they escaped was Virginia Tech. If you remember that last second heave into the end zone and it got overturned. Especially that it's 4 points, you know, beyond that field goal, I'm going with Louisville also. So next game up, we're going to the Big Ten, and, you know, crazy that this is a huge game, but this is Nebraska at Indiana, at the undefeated Indiana Hoosiers. Indiana is actually a 6.5-point favorite in this one, Sean.
I'm really excited for this game. Indiana, as you just mentioned, has played some great football this season. But I'd argue Nebraska's the best team they've faced to date. And the Cornhuskers, they're not doing bad. They're 5-1, only loss coming against a really good Illinois team that's still a ranked team. So in this matchup, I'm going to lean Nebraska on the road. Things get dangerous in the Big Ten on the road. And you know what? I'm going to take Nebraska with the points. I think something special can happen here, Jim. And if I'm Indiana, I'm worried about that undefeated season. So, you know, I'm going to take Nebraska to cover this one.
After last week's picks, Sean, I am loath to agree with you, okay? However, in this one, if you look at Indiana's schedule, it has been Charmin soft. I mean, it's been awful. They don't have a win that you look at and say, hey, that's a good win. They had a terrible out-of-conference schedule. In conference, UCLA, Maryland, Northwestern, not good at all. I think Nebraska has something going on there. especially if you're going to give me 6.5 points, Sean. I'm going with the Cornhuskers here also. Now, our next game, it's interesting in contrast. I think Nebraska and Indiana have exceeded our expectations. This one is Alabama-Tennessee, where I don't think there's much doubt that neither one of these teams has met expectations this year. This is Alabama at Tennessee. Alabama lost at Vanderbilt, came close to losing at home to South Carolina. And then you have Tennessee, who has their own issues going on. So in this one, Alabama is a 2.5 point favorite on the road.
A super, super interesting game. And, you know, for a while, we thought we'd be coming into this game with two undefeated teams, and that's not the case now. When I look at this game, I think experience is going to be a really big thing here, and Alabama has that experience. I trust Alabama more. And, you know, for Tennessee, like, their issue right now is that offense. Their defense is playing really well, to their credit. I didn't think we'd have to worry about this offense after the first 4 weeks of the season, but that's where my concern is right now. And we've seen Alabama be battle tested. We've seen them step up in the biggest moment against Georgia. And this is a comparable game right now. So I'm going to go Alabama to step up in the moment. I think they're better than they've played the past couple weeks. And I've got more worries about Tennessee than I have about Alabama.
You know, this one's a tough one for me. And I don't feel good about this, but I'm going with Tennessee because as you were talking about trusting Alabama, I just kept thinking about Vanderbilt. I kept thinking about South Carolina. I kept thinking about the second half against Georgia when they had a big lead and actually gave up the lead. So I'm going to go with Tennessee at home. I'll take those 2.5 points. Next game up, Notre Dame at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech is getting 10.5 points at home. Remember, early on, we were impressed that Georgia Tech beat a Florida State team that was ranked in the top 10 when things started. And we were wondering, is Georgia Tech that good? I'm not sure that meant much beating Florida State. But again, Notre Dame on the road, Georgia Tech, 10.5 point spread.
This is a really tough game for me because, one, we don't really know, like you said, how good is Georgia Tech. And I also don't think we quite know how good Notre Dame is. Notre Dame right now looks like a playoff team. And this is still a solid Georgia Tech team, no matter what. Like Florida State, not a great win. This is still a solid football team. And they want to get in the way of Notre Dame's, you know, path to the college football playoffs. So I don't love this amount of points, but I think Notre Dame can control this game, and I think they can put the hammer down. We saw Louisville beat Georgia Tech by 12. That would cover this spread. I think Notre Dame is, well, they are. We already know they're better than Louisville from their head-to-head matchup, but I think Notre Dame is rolling right now. I think they're confident, and I think that they're going to be able to handle business here.
I'm going with Notre Dame also because I think they're on a playoff roll. They've got it out in front of them. That loss to Northern Illinois is way back in the rearview mirror. I think they're playing with much more confidence. All right, another real interesting Big Ten game. This is Michigan at Illinois. Illinois is getting 3 points at home, and Illinois has played well. In their one loss to Penn State, they did play pretty well. They represented themselves well. They were tied at halftime, and Michigan – no passing game to speak of. How you see this game going?
Yeah, this is a huge showing of Big Ten football. I think we're going to see a very traditional Big Ten game. Now, last week, it was interesting for Illinois. The offense looked great, dropping 50, but giving up 49 points to Purdue is really concerning with how we've seen Purdue play this year. Meanwhile, Michigan's coming off a tough loss against Washington a couple weeks ago. They had a bye week to try and fix things. But, Jim, I don't think you can fix this Michigan offense over the course of a bye week. So I think Illinois is a more complete team. I think they're a lot better offensively. And being an underdog at home, I'm going to rock with Illinois.
I'm going that way also. I think if you took the names off the uniforms, if it wasn't Michigan and Illinois, would be much more impressed with Illinois. And Michigan, we've questioned them since before the season even started. I think the questions have been legitimate. So, and this Illinois team, this is such a huge game for them. This really is that game that says, are they legit or not? Yes, it was nice to go into Happy Valley and be competitive, but they need a win. I'm going with Illinois in this one also. All right, next up, huge game. Before the season started, you might have thought this was number one versus number two. This is Georgia at Texas. Well, Texas has lived up to that headlines. Georgia, meanwhile, they've lost to Alabama. They've had a close call with Kentucky. Is Georgia still Georgia? We're going to find out. Texas is a 3.5-point favorite at home, which, by the way, kind of tells you it's the home field advantage is why they're getting those points.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this brings me back to Georgia-Alabama week when we were talking about that game. When those two teams played, I thought Georgia was the better team, but I thought Alabama would win the game. This situation with Georgia and Texas feels very similar. Georgia's not better than Texas, and they really haven't looked great these past couple weeks. But what I do know about Georgia is they're going to be prepared for this game. Kirby Smart is going to have his team ready. However, I think Texas is just that good. So I'm going to back Texas in this game. It's going to be a great game, but I think Texas is the best team in the country, and I think they're going to show it.
I'm with you again with Texas. Georgia, their back is against the wall. They can't lose another game. And I think that will be a driving force here. But Texas is playing so well. They're playing like a number one team. They're at home. I think Georgia has shown they're vulnerable. And it's going to be really interesting because if Georgia does lose this game, they still have games with Ole Miss and Tennessee where they can stub their toe again. And could you imagine a 3-loss Georgia team? Those are factors I would usually go with, but I just think Texas is the much more complete team, so I'm going with the Longhorns. All right, that's our Pulp Daddy six-pack, but wait, bonus pick. We can't go a week without talking about your Colorado Buffaloes, can we?
No, Colorado, we cannot.
They're on the road. They're at Arizona in the crazy, chaotic Big 12. Arizona at home is a 4-point favorite. What do you think?
I'll break it down like this. If Travis Hunter and Jimmy Horn play, give me Colorado. If they don't, I think I'll reluctantly have to side with Arizona. It comes down to health with me, so be watching those injury reports come Saturday morning. Travis Hunter, Jimmy Horn, if you're playing, I'm with the Buffaloes.
All right, so what's the latest? Are they going to play?
I don't know. It's going to be – I think we might get some game time decisions there.
I'm going Colorado with the 4 points. I'm going to bet on them being on the field. So I'm and Colorado, they have been good to me, not just last week. They've been good to me for several weeks, Sean. So that's the way I'm going to go on that game also. All right. Wonderful picks. Fingers crossed, Sean, that we're going to have a better week this week than we did a week ago. I'm not sure, though. I felt pretty good last week. I feel pretty good this week again. That is our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.